Mr. Berg, I'm David Morgan. I remember you from when my father owned Jabulani. I'd like you to meet my wife. Berg's expression wavered. Naturally, he had heard all the rumors about the new owner of Jabulani. It was a lonely, isolated area, and it was his job to know about these things. Yet he was unprepared for this dreadfully mutilated young man and his blind but beautiful wife. With an awkward gallantry, Berg doffed his hat, then realized she would not see the gesture. He murmured a greeting, and when David thrust his hand through the fence, he shook it cautiously. Deborah and David were working as a team, and they turned their combined charm upon Berg, who was a simple and direct man. Slowly, his defenses softened as they chatted. He admired Zulu. He also kept Labradors, and it served as a talking point while Deborah unpacked a thermos of coffee and David filled mugs for all of them. "Isn't that Sam?" David pointed to the game ranger in the truck who held Berg's rifle.
"Yeah."
Berg was guarded. "He used to work on Jabulani."
"He came to me of his own accord," Berg explained, turning aside any implied rebuke. "He wouldn't remember me, of course, not the way I look now, but he was a fine ranger, and the place certainly went to the bad without him to look after it," David admitted, before he went into a frontal assault. "The other thing which has ruined us is this fence of yours." David kicked one of the uprights.
"You don't say." Berg swished the grounds of his coffee around the mug and flicked it out.
"Why did you do it?"
"For good reason.
My father had a gentleman's agreement with the board. The boundary was open at all times. We've got water and grazing that you need."
"With all respects to the late Mr. Morgan," Conrad Berg spoke heavily, "I was never in favor of the open boundary."
"Why not?"
"Your daddy was a sportsman."
He spat the word out, as though it were a mouthful of rotten meat. "When my lions got to know him and learned to stay this side of the line, then he used to bring down a couple of donkeys and parade them along the boundary to tempt them out."
David opened his mouth to protest, and then closed it slowly. He felt the seamed scars of his face mottling and staining with a flush of shame. It was true. He remembered the donkeys and the soft, wet lion skins being pegged out to dry behind the homestead.
"He never poached," David defended him. "He had an owner's license, and they were all shot on our land."
"No, he never poached," Berg admitted. "He was too damn clever for that. He knew I would have put a rocket up him that would have made him the first man on the moon."
"So that's why you put up the fence?"
"No."
"Or why then?"
"Because for 14 years Jabulani has been under the care of an absentee landlord who didn't give a good damn what happened to it. Old Sam here," he motioned at the game ranger in the truck, "did his best, but still it became a poacher's paradise. As fast as the grazing and water you boast of pulled my game out of the park, so they were cut down by every sportsman with an itchy trigger finger. When Sam tried to do something about it, he got badly beaten up. And when that didn't stop him, somebody put fire in his hut at night. They burned two of his kids to death."
David felt his very soul quail at the thought of the flames on flesh. His cheeks itched at the memory.
"I didn't know," he said gruffly.
"No, you were too busy making money or whatever is your particular form of pleasure."
Berg was angry.
"So at last Sam came to me and I gave him a job. And then I strung this fence. There's nothing left on Jabulani. A few kudu and a diker or two, but otherwise it's all gone."
"You are so right. It didn't take them long to clean it out."
"I want it back."
"Why?"
Berg scoffed. "So you can be a sportsman like your daddy? So you can fly your pals down from Joburg for the weekend to shoot the shit out of my lions?"
Berg glanced at Deborah, and immediately his red face flushed a deep port wine color.
"I'm sorry, Mrs. Morgan, I did not mean to say that."
"That's perfectly all right, Mr. Berg. I think it was very expressive."
Thank you, ma'am."
Then he turned furiously back to David.
"Morgan's private safari service, is that what you're after?"
"I would not allow a shot fired on Jabulani," said David.
"I bet, except for the pot."
"That's the usual story."
"Except for the pot. And you've got the Battle of Waterloo being fought all over again."
"No," said David. "Not even for the pot." You'd eat butcher's beef? Berg asked incredulously.
Look here, Mr. Berg. If you pull your fence out, I'll have Jabulani declared a private nature reserve.
Berg had been about to say something, but David's declaration dried the words, and his mouth remained hanging open. He closed it slowly.
You know what that means? He asked at last. You place yourself under our jurisdiction completely. We'd tie you up properly with a lawyer's paper and all that stuff. No owner's license, no shooting lions because they're in a cattle area.
Yes, I know. I've studied the act.
But there is something more. I'd undertake to fence the other three boundaries to your satisfaction and maintain a force of private game rangers that you considered adequate, all at my own expense.
Conrad Berg lifted his hat and scratched pensively at the long, sparse grey hairs that covered his pate.
Man, he said mournfully, how can I say no to that?
Then he began to smile. First smile of the meeting.
Looks like you are really serious about this, then.
My wife and I are going to be living here permanently. We don't want to live in a desert.
Yeah, he nodded, understanding completely that a man should feel that way. The strong revulsion that he had originally felt for the fantastic face before him was fading. I think the first thing we should work on is these poachers you tell me about. Let's snatch a couple of those and make a few examples, David went on.
Berg's big red face split into a happy grin.
I think I'm going to enjoy having you as a neighbor, he said. And again he thrust his hand through the fence. David winced as he felt his knuckles cracking in the huge fist.
Won't you come to dinner with us tomorrow night, you and your wife?
Deborah asked with relief.
It will be a mighty great pleasure, Mum.
I'll get out the whiskey bottle, said David.
That's kind of you, said Conrad Berg seriously. But the missus and I only drink Old Buck dry gin with a little water.
I'll see to it, said David, just as seriously.
Jane Berg was a slim woman of about Conrad's age. She had a dried-out face, lined and browned by the sun. Her hair was sun-bleached and streaked with grey, and as Deborah remarked, she was probably the only thing in the world that Conrad was afraid of.
I'm talking, Connie,
was enough to halt any flow of eloquence from her huge spouse, or a significant glance at her empty glass sent him with elephantine haste for a refill. Conrad had a great deal of trouble finishing any story or statement, for Jane had to correct the details during the telling, while he waited patiently for an opportunity to resume. Deborah chose the main course with care so as not to give offence. Beefsteaks from the deep freeze, and Conrad ate four of them with unreserved pleasure, although he spurned the wine that David served.
That stuff is poison. Killed one of my uncles.
And stayed with Old Buck gin even through the dessert. Afterwards they sat about the cavernous fireplace with its logs blazing cheerfully, and Conrad explained, with Jane's assistance, the problems that David would face on Jabulani.
You get a few of the blacks from the tribal areas coming in from the north, or across the river, Jane added. Or across the river, but they are no big sweat. They set wire snares mostly, and they don't kill that much. But it's a terribly cruel way. The poor animals linger on for days with the wire cutting down to the bone, Jane elaborated. As I was saying, once we have a few rangers busy, that will stop almost immediately. It's the white poachers with modern rifles and hunting lamps.
Killing lamps, Jane corrected. Killing lamps that do the real damage.
They finished off all your game on Jabulani in a couple of seasons.
Where do they come from? David asked. His anger was rising again, the same protective anger of the shepherd that he had felt as he flew the skies of Israel.
There's a big copper mine 50 miles north of here at Falaboa. Hundreds of bored miners with a taste for venison. They would come down here and blaze away at every living thing. But now it's not worth the trip for them. Anyway, they were just the amateurs, the weekend poachers.
Who were the professionals?
Where the dirt road from Jabulani meets the big national highway, about 30 miles from here, at a place called Bandelier Hill, Jane supplied the name, there's a general dealer's store. It's just one of those trading posts that gets a little of the passing trade from the main road, but relies on the natives from the tribal areas. The person who owns and runs it has been there 8 years now,
and I have been after him all that time, but he is the craftiest bastard, I'm sorry, Mrs. Morgan, I have ever run into.
He's the one? David asked.
He's the one, Conrad nodded. Catch him, and half your worries are over.
What's his name?
Ackers. Johann Ackers, Jane gave her assistance. The old buck was making her slightly owl-eyed, and she was having a little difficulty with her enunciation.
How are we going to get him? David mused. There isn't anything left on Jabulani to tempt him. The few kudu we've got are so wild it wouldn't be worth the effort.
No, you haven't got anything to tempt him right now. But about the middle of September, now more like the first week in September, Jane said firmly, with strings of hair starting to hang down her temples. The first week in September, the marula trees down by your pools will come into fruit, and my elephants are going to visit you. The one thing they just can't resist is marula berries, and they are going to flatten my fence to get at them. Before I can repair it, a lot of other game are going to follow the jumbo over to your side. You can lay any type of odds you like that our friend Ackers is oiling his guns and drooling at the mouth right this minute. He will know within an hour when the fence goes.
This time he may get a surprise. Let's hope so. I think, David said softly, that we might run down to Bandelier Hill tomorrow and have a look at this gentleman.
One thing is for sure, said Jane Berg indistinctly. A gentleman he is not.
The road down to Bandelier Hill was heavily corrugated and thick with white dust that rose in a banner behind the Land Rover and hung in the air long after they had passed. The hill was rounded and thickly timbered and stood over the main metalled highway. The trading post was 400 or 500 yards from the road junction, set back amidst a grove of mango trees with their deep green and glistening foliage. It was a type found all over Africa, an unlovely building of mud brick with a naked corrugated iron roof, the walls plastered thickly with posters advertising goods from tea to flashlight batteries. David parked the Land Rover in the dusty yard beneath the raised stoop. There was a faded sign above the front steps. Bandelier Hill General Dealers. At the side of the building was parked an old green Ford one-ton truck with local license plates. In the shade of the stoop squatted a dozen or so potential customers, African women from the tribal area, dressed in long cotton print dresses, timeless in their patience and their expressions showing no curiosity about the occupants of the Land Rover. One of the women was suckling her infant with an enormously elongated breast that allowed the child to stand beside her and watch the newcomers without removing the puckered black nipple from his mouth. Set in the center of the yard was a thick, straight pole, 15 feet tall, and on top of the pole was a wooden structure like a dog kennel. David exclaimed as from the kennel emerged a big brown furry animal. It descended the pole in one swift falling action, seemingly as lightly as a bird, and the chain that was fastened to the pole at one end was, at the other, buckled about the animal's waist by a thick leather strap. It's one of the biggest old bull baboons I've ever seen. Quickly he described it to Deborah, as the baboon moved out to the chain's limit, and knuckled the ground as he made a leisurely circle about his pole, the chain clinking as it swung behind him. It was an arrogant display, and he ruffled out the thick mane of his hair upon his shoulders. When he had completed the circle, he sat down facing the Land Rover, in a repellently humanoid attitude, and thrust out his lower jaw as he regarded them through small, brown, close-set eyes. A nasty beast, David told Deborah. He would weigh 90 pounds, with a long, dog-like muzzle and a jaw full of yellow fangs. After the hyena, he was the most hated animal of the felt. Cunning, cruel, and avaricious, all the vices of man and none of his graces. His stare was unblinking, and every few seconds he ducked his head in a quick, aggressive gesture. While all David's attention was on the baboon, a man had come out of the store and now leaned on one of the pillars of the veranda.
"What can I do for you, Mr. Morgan?"
he asked in a thick accent. He was tall and spare,
dressed in slightly rumpled and not entirely clean khaki slacks and open-neck shirt, with heavy boots on his feet and braces hooked into his pants, crossing his shoulders. "How do you know my name?" David looked up at him, and saw he was of middle age with close-cropped greying hair over a domed skull. His teeth were badly fitting, with bright pink plastic gums, and his skin was drawn over the bones of the cheeks, and his deep-set eyes gave him a skull-like look. He grinned at David's question. "Could only be you, scarred face and blind wife. You, the new owner of Jabulani. Heard you built a new house and all set to live there now." The man's hands were huge, out of proportion to the rest of his rangy body. They were clearly very powerful, and the lean muscles of his forearms were as tough as rope. He slouched easily against the pillar, and took from his pocket a clasp knife and a stick of black wind-dried meat, the jerky of North America, boucan of the Caribbean, or the biltong of Africa. And he cut a slice as though it were a plug of tobacco, popping it into his mouth. "Like I asked, what can we do for you?" He chewed noisily, his teeth squelching at each bite. "I need nails and paint." David climbed out of the Land Rover. "Heard you did all your buying in Nelspruit." Uckers looked him over with a calculated insolence, studying David's ruined face with attention. David saw that his deep-set eyes were a muddy green in colour. "I thought there was a law against caging or chaining wild animals." Uckers had roused David's resentment almost immediately, and the needle showed in his tone. Uckers began to grin again easily, still chewing. "You a lawyer, are you?" "Just asking." "I got a permit. You want to see it?" David shook his head and turned to speak to Deborah in Hebrew. Quickly, he described the man. "I think he can guess why we're here, and he's looking for trouble." "I'll stay by the car," said Deborah. "Good." David climbed the steps to the veranda. "What about the nails and paint?" he asked Akers. "Go on in," he was still grinning. "I got a nigger helper behind the counter. He'll look after you." David hesitated and then walked into the building. It smelled of carbolic soap and kerosene and maize meal. The shelves were loaded with cheap groceries, patent medicines, blankets and bolts of printed cotton cloth. From the roof hung bunches of army surplus boots and greatcoats, axe heads and storm lanterns. The floor was stacked with tin trunks, pick handles, bins of flour and maize meal, and the hundreds of other items that traditionally make up the stock of the country dealer. David found the African assistant and began his purchase. Outside in the sunlight, Deborah climbed from the Land Rover and leaned lightly against the door. The Labrador scrambled down after her and began sniffing the concrete pillars of the veranda with interest, where other dogs before him had spurted jets of yellow urine against the whitewashed plaster. "Nice dog," said Uckers. "Thank you," Deborah nodded politely. Uckers glanced quickly across at his pet baboon, and his expression was suddenly cunning. A flash of understanding passed between man and animal. The baboon ducked its head again in that nervous gesture, then it rose from its haunches and drifted back to the pole. With a leap and bound, it shot up the pole and disappeared into the opening of its kennel. Uckers grinned and carefully cut another slice of the black biltong. "You like it out of Jabulani?" he asked Deborah, and at the same time he offered the scrap of dried meat to the dog. "We're very happy there," Deborah replied stiffly, not wanting to be drawn. Zulu sniffed the proffered titbit, and his tail beat like a metronome. No dog can resist the concentrated meat smell and taste of biltong. He gulped it eagerly. Twice more, Uckers fed him the scraps, and Zulu's eyes glistened and his soft, silky muzzle was damp with saliva. The waiting women in the shade of the veranda were watching with lively interest now. They had seen this happen before with a dog, and they waited expectantly. David was in the building out of sight. Deborah stood blind and unsuspecting. Uckers cut a larger piece of the dried meat and offered it to Zulu. Then, when he reached for it, he pulled his hand away, teasing the dog. With his taste for biltong now firmly established, Zulu tried again for the meat as it was offered. Again, it was pulled away at the last moment. Zulu's black, wet nose quivered with anxiety, and the soft ears were cocked. Akkas walked down the steps, with Zulu following him eagerly, and at the bottom he showed the dog the biltong once more, letting him sniff it. Then he spoke softly but urgently, "Get it, boy," and threw the scrap of black biltong at the base of the baboon's pole. Zulu bounded forward, still slightly clumsy on his big puppy paws, into the circle of the chain where the baboon's paws had beaten the earth hard. He ran on under the pole and grubbed hungrily for the biltong in the dust. The bull baboon came out of his kennel like a tawny grey blur and dropped the 15 feet through the air. His limbs were spread and his jaws were open in a snarl like a great red trap, and the fangs were vicious, long and yellow and spiked. He hit the ground silently, and his muscles bunched as they absorbed the shock, and hurled the long, lithe body feet first at the unsuspecting pup. The baboon crashed into him, taking him on the shoulder with all the weight of his 90 pounds. Zulu went down and over, rolling on his back with a startled yelp, but before he could find his feet or his wits, the baboon was after him. Deborah heard the pup cry and started forward, surprised but not yet alarmed. As he lay on his back, Zulu's belly was unprotected, sparsely covered with the silken black hair, the immature penis protruding pathetically, and the baboon went onto him in a crouching leap, pinning him with powerful furry legs as he bowed his head and buried the long yellow fangs deep into the pup's belly. Zulu screamed in dreadful agony, and Deborah screamed in sympathy and ran forward. Akkas shot out a foot as she passed him and tripped her, sending her sprawling on her hands and knees. "Leave it, lady," he warned her, still grinning. "You'll get hurt if you interfere." The baboon locked its long, curved eye teeth into the tender belly and then hurled the pup away from it with all the fierce strength of its four limbs. The thin wall of the stomach was ripped through, and the purple ropes of the entrails came out, hanging festooned in the baboon's jaws. Again the disemboweled pup screamed, and Deborah rolled blindly to her feet. "David!" she cried wildly. "David, help me!" David came out of the building running. Pausing in the doorway, he took in the scene at a glance and snatched up a pick-handle from the pile by the door. He jumped off the veranda, and in three quick strides he had reached the pup. The baboon saw him coming and released Zulu. With uncanny speed, he whirled and leapt for the pole, racing upwards to perch on the roof of the kennel, his jowls red with blood, as he shrieked and jabbered, bouncing up and down with excitement and triumph. David dropped the pick and gently lifted the crawling, crippled black body. He carried Zulu to the Land Rover and ripped his bush jacket into strips as he tried to bind up the torn belly, pushing the hanging entrails back into the hole with his fist. "David, what is it?" Deborah pleaded with him. And as he worked, he explained it in a few terse Hebrew sentences. "Get in," he told her, and she clambered into the passenger seat of the Land Rover. He laid the injured Labrador in her lap and ran around to the driver's seat. Akkas was back at the doorway of his shop, standing with his thumbs hooked into his braces, and he was laughing. The false teeth clucked in the open mouth as he laughed, rocking back and forth on his heels. On its kennel, the baboon shrieked and cavorted, sharing its master's mirth. "Hey, Mr. Morgan," Akkas giggled. "Don't forget your nails." David swung round to face him. His face felt tight and hot. The cicatrice that covered his cheeks and forehead were inflamed, and the dark blue eyes blazed with terrible anger. He started up the steps. His mouth was a pale, hard slit, and his fists were clenched at his sides. Akkas stepped backwards swiftly and reached behind the shop counter. He lifted out an old double-barreled shotgun and cocked both hammers with a sweep of his thick, bony thumb. "Self-defense, Mr. Morgan, with witnesses," he giggled with sadistic relish. "Ha-ha! Come one step closer, and we'll get a look at your guts also." David paused at the top of the steps, and the gun, held in one huge fist, pointed at his belly. "David, hurry! Oh, please hurry!" Deborah called anxiously from the Land Rover, with the weakly squirming body of the pup in her lap. "We'll meet again." David's anger had thickened his tongue. That will be fun, said Akers, and David turned away and ran down the steps. Akers watched the Land Rover pull away and swing into the road in a cloud of dust before he set the shotgun aside. He went out into the sunlight, and the baboon scrambled down from its pole and rushed to meet him. It jumped up onto his hip and clung to him like a child. Akers took a boiled sweet from his pocket and placed it tenderly between the terrible yellow fangs.
You lovely old thing, he chuckled, scratching the high cranium with its thick cap of grey fur.
And the baboon squinted up at his face with narrow brown eyes, chattering softly. Despite the rough road surface, David covered the 30 miles back to Jabalani in 25 minutes. He skidded the vehicle to a halt beside the hangar and ran with the pup in his arms to the aircraft. During the flight, Deborah nursed him gently in her lap, and her skirts were sodden with his dark blood. The pup had quieted, and except for an occasional whimper, now lay still. Over the WT, David arranged for a car to meet them at Nelspruit Airfield, and 45 minutes after takeoff, they had Zulu on the theatre table in the veterinary surgeon's clinic.